Rokan Show, 720 WGN. Maybe you saw this on FoxNews.com yesterday. Dr. William Hazeltine, Harvard professor and also an epidemiologist, very much at the forefront of the HIV-AIDS fight over the last four decades, wrote an article about the three ways this virus could be battled over the next number of weeks, months, and years. So, Dr. Hazeltine, thanks for joining us. Let's talk about the first issue, seasonality. Do you believe that this virus could disappear this spring or summer?
It can, but we can't count on it. We know this virus does well in hot and humid climates like Singapore. It is not a good strategy to rely on seasonality.
Is seasonality more about the virus itself or how we interact with each other?
I believe it's more how we interact with each other than it is the virus itself.
Do you think these measures so far in New York and Illinois, Connecticut, California, a number of states now have adopted this stay-at-home policies, is that the best way initially to fight this?
It's not the best way, but it is a way. The best way is to follow the Chinese example, which was to assume anybody in contact with a virus-infected person should be strictly quarantined. By that, I mean placed in a hotel and not allowed to leave the room. That's the best way, absent any medical intervention. What we're doing is a half measure, more akin to what's happened in Italy, and we've seen the consequences.
There is another factor that you talked about in your op-ed for Fox News, which was herd immunity, that eventually, as the governor of New York said last night, he believes that up to 80% of New York residents are going to get this virus. Is that another way and maybe the only way that we're going to be able to overcome it?
That is certainly not the only way, and it's a recipe for massive death and destruction. If 20% of 80% of people fall ill, or 15%, because remember, this virus kills, but it also seriously disables about 15% or more of people that it infects, whether they are young or old. Half of the patients in hospital today in New York are between 18 and 45. You think of what it means if 200 million people are infected and 40 million of those people require hospitalization. It is a recipe for disaster. That could happen, but it's what we want to avoid at any possible cost.
We're talking to Dr. William Hazeltine, professor at Harvard, wrote an op-ed for Fox News over the weekend, one of the big players in the fight against HIV/AIDS and an epidemiologist. Vaccines. The administration now is saying that they're moving faster toward a vaccine than they ever have. There are a couple of clinical trials, early trials going on right now. Do you think a vaccine could be ready by the fall?
It's possible. Fall is a little short term, and I'll tell you why. Vaccines are administered to healthy people. And when you administer any treatment to healthy people, especially very large numbers of healthy people, you've got to have a very good idea that there's not going to be a negative side effect. And the only way to approximate that is to test it on many, many people. I'm going to give you a number that may surprise you, but testing a vaccine on one person costs $25,000 or more. Multiply that by the 10 to 20,000 minimum that you're going to have to use that on if you're going to use a vaccine for a large number of people. You run into a lot of money and a lot of time, but it takes a long time to enroll all those people and to see whether there's a difference between those who are exposed and get infected and those who are exposed and don't. So the government's best estimate, as far as NIH is concerned, is it'll be many months before a vaccine will be developed. I should also say that the current vaccines that you have read about that are in clinical trials are unproven in two ways. The fundamental technology has never been proven, and whether it will work against the coronavirus is also unknown. There later will be more standard methods that are known to work for other viruses that will be applied to this virus. But whether these new methods that are being referred to will work at all is questionable. We don't know the answer.
Can you explain why it's $25,000 per patient? Where's the cost driver there?
In recruiting the patient, you have to cover all of their medical costs. When you recruit a patient for a clinical trial, you become responsible for their medical care, all of their care in that period of time. It's an expensive process to find them, enroll them, follow them. Think of all the people who have to be involved in monitoring the person who's been exposed to the vaccine. You have to treat them as a patient. That's expensive. They may not be patients, but you have to treat them as if they are, and you have to monitor them carefully for a long period of time, and you're going to have to follow them until you have enough data of whether or not they or the control arm is being infected at the same rate. Not an easy process. You may think you have a candidate, but you don't know you have it until you've actually done the test. And so it's the testing process.
We're talking to Dr. William Hazeltine. He is a professor at Harvard University's Medical School, also was a major player in the fight against AIDS over the last four decades. He wrote a very widely read op-ed for FoxNews.com over the weekend. And just a few minutes ago, Dr. Hazeltine, we were talking about different ways that we might be able to fight this virus. Let's go back to the issue of vaccines.
Two or three vaccines that are already gone into early stage human trials are unproven even as to whether the method that they use will work at all. There are many methods we know that work. The ones that are currently being tested, we do not know if they'll work at all.
Let me dive into that for 1 second. So the current kind of vaccines, like the flu vaccine and others, are based on using either dead versions of the virus or altered versions of the virus in the vaccine.
Or fragments of the virus, or like hepatitis B, using a fragment of the virus itself.
So that your immune system gets used to that invader and reacts to it.
And basically a vaccine is an early alert that your immune system is prepared. Think of it as preparing the body for infection, so there can be a rapid reaction. That's what a vaccine is.
And this new vaccine is based on the notion that these proteins that, for lack of a better term, like claws on this particular virus, the proteins themselves can be battled so it can't take hold. Is that about the idea?
We know if we take those outer proteins, the spike proteins of the virus, the one you've seen, the one that gives it its name, so it looks like a crown. If you take those proteins and you purify them and you use that as a vaccine, it is very likely to work. What these new vaccines are trying to do is take the genetic information that makes that protein and use that as a vaccine, not the protein itself. And that is what has not been proven. People will soon have the protein in hand and will be using that in one way or another to make a type of vaccine that we know that works. Whether this approach is going to work, we do not know.
Dr. Hazeltine, let's talk about therapeutics finally, because there seems to be some momentum and some interest, especially in the White House, and some optimism about this malaria drug, also with an antibiotic. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, the White House is not the right place to look for information about effectiveness of drugs. You look to the NIH and you look to the FDA, but the last place to look is a White House that wants to be overly optimistic. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is that whether or not chloroquine or derivatives of chloroquine in combination with a standard antibiotic work at all is unknown. We do not know. It requires a careful clinical trial. Whether it will work or not, we don't know. And what most people don't understand about the unknown is how unknown it is. You really don't know until you've done the trial. That's the first thing to say about what we've seen. However, I am very optimistic that we will have drugs to treat those infected, and we will have drugs to prevent infection of those exposed. Two different uses of the drug. Treat those infected so they don't get ill, and treat people who are exposed so they don't get infected. Those give pre-exposure prevention. Those drugs will be developed, and I believe they can be developed sooner than later. There may be drugs already approved by the FDA that will perform both functions. We don't know that, but we are now testing them. And there are ways that we've worked out to do very rapid tests. For example, within hours of administering these drugs, we should be able to see the effect on the level of virus in the blood. We don't have to wait for even days to see whether a patient is getting better. If that virus level drops, it's called a surrogate marker, and we'd be reasonably sure that patient will survive. And a few days later, we'll have the clinical evidence. We can move these trials very, very quickly. But I can tell you there are many drugs or drug candidates that have already been shown to work against almost all coronaviruses, SARS, MERS, and other coronaviruses. And they are almost certain to work against this one, too. Those chemicals can be moved very quickly into clinical trials. If we're lucky, we should have those results within several weeks if the drug is approved, and we could have the results for drugs that have not yet been approved but have been identified as having potent antiviral activity by summer.
Do you see any impediments to that at this point?
I see no impediments other than slight modifications in some of the FDA rules, which I'm sure that they will bend in this situation. They've been very flexible for HIV/AIDS. They were very flexible, in my experience, when we worked with them on developing drugs to counteract anthrax, and I'm sure they're going to be very flexible in this case as well. I see no barriers. Why don't we already have those drugs, and why weren't they stockpiled?
All right.
To prevent it.
What's the answer to that?
The answer to that is there's no economic model for pharmaceutical companies to do that. It's not going to be a multi-billion dollar drug that you have a revenue that comes in every year. That's why, even though it was clear we could have developed those drugs, and we had many chemicals that we knew would work against these viruses, nobody took them to the next stage. What we need to do is have non-market incentives to get these drugs developed. You know, when we think about foreign enemies, we're not shy of spending $800 billion every year to protect ourselves against a foreign enemy by having a public-private partnership where the government guarantees a market for munitions manufacturer, jet planes, howitzers, et cetera. And we have the legislation on the books that allow us to stockpile and government to pay for drugs against this kind of agent. We just haven't used them for the coronaviruses. We should, and I hope we do. We're going to need more than one drug. We're going to need several drugs. Think of it just like HIV/AIDS. We have right now about 30 different drugs against four different targets for HIV/AIDS. Why? Because these viruses are wily. They keep changing. They can adapt to whatever drug you throw at them. You've got to throw two or three at the same time, and you've got to have combinations. We've been great against hepatitis B virus. We now have seven different drugs, and they use them in combination, usually two. We'll need, over time, I would say, at least 10 different drugs. The good thing about that is there are plenty of great targets we already know and have shown work to stop this virus. The virus internal working is really not hard to stop to get it to work. And it's conserved for all coronaviruses, so it shouldn't be a problem. This is a problem that can and will be solved.
Can you give me a sense of a timeline here for that particular issue about the drugs? Do you see that happening?
If it's an FDA-approved drug now, it's a matter of weeks before it's going to be done. That's a big if, because we don't know if any of the drugs that are currently approved will work. If it is one of the drug candidates that's already been shown to work against many of the viruses, it will be summer before we have those drugs, because we need to do the additional testing, and it's not yet approved. But that is not too long. I think it can be done pretty quickly. And those drugs, as I point out, should be used not only to treat, but could be used to prevent anybody from getting infected. You could take it protectively.
Dr. Hazeltine, is this a months, years, or decades-long fight against this particular virus or this family of viruses?
Months.
That's optimistic. I like that.
Taking a very aggressive antiviral drug strategy, it is a matter of months, not of years. And if this is seasonal and comes back next September, October, we should have drugs at hand so we don't get shut down again.
Dr. William Hazeltine, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.